For those that I haven't met, my name is Myers Raymond, very grateful recovered alcoholic from Ingram, Texas, which is in the middle of freaking nowhere. It's golly, we're way out here in the sticks. And it's such a treat to be able to do this. And of all of the things that we get to talk about this weekend, I just love this particular part of this thing. And I'm going to be real brief. I'm a trained professional and I've got my watch all set up here like this, and I won't talk over. That's all for you, Carrie, because I knew you'd be sweating BBs the whole time. So that, I got sober January 15th of 88, and I went to an AA club up in North Texas, and we had 32 meetings a week, and they were all discussion meetings. We had no literature-based meetings at all, and we had big books to set coffee cups on, but we didn't read them. And it was like a gaggle of the nicest people in the world. I still to these days grin every time I think about that group and those folks. But I sure didn't learn very much. And in the beginning, it didn't seem to matter. But after a while, it mattered a lot. I was 7 years sober, almost 7 years sober, and I was absolutely an idiot around the big book. I didn't know anything. And there's a problem there. And we'll talk a little bit about that. There was this guy that used to sit in that meeting named Jim. And every time Jim would introduce himself, he'd go, "My name's Jim. I'm sober today." Just like that. And I'm going, and he'd always kind of look across the room. He wasn't looking at anybody in particular. He was just kind of staring across the room. And every time he did it, and it got to be sort of a group funny thing, listening to him introduce himself like that. And I didn't connect anything up until years later. And I went, I wonder if Jim realized that maybe there was more to the program than just being sober today. I mean, in the words of my friend Mickey Bush, so's the cat. I mean, if all of this is about just staying sober one day at a time, then rock on, go get them. But I think that there's more, and I suspect that over the years I've been blessed to have men and women in my life who knew and understood that there was indeed more. Mark Houston used to always say, "I smell more." And I used to always laugh thinking, what is he talking about? I don't get it. I just didn't. It just went right over my head. There was another guy in that group and named Don, who was ironically my twin brother, Chris's first sponsor. And Don was an iconic member of that group. And he was always there. It was like, every time I was there, he was there. And one day he went missing and we didn't see him for 2 or 3 days. And then he showed back up again. And I said, "Don, where you been?" And he said, "I'll tell you inside." And so I knew we were going to talk about it. That was going to be the topic of the meeting, was where he'd been for 3 days. And so he had been to he had a psychologist that got him involved in some kind of a program to try to figure out what he was good at. And so he was going to train for a while on this and took a bunch of tests. And then in the end, I said, "Well, what'd you find out?" And he said, "I'm getting to that part. I'm getting to it." And he finally got to it an hour later. He said, and so at the end of this thing, they pulled me into this room with a couple of physicians and they were looking at me and they said, "Well, Don, it's interesting. You're a perfectly well-adjusted adolescent." And Don was 48 years old at the time. And I remember thinking about it and we kind of laughed. It was funny like that, but I didn't connect it up until later when we kind of, as I got healthier, I began to look back on that story and I realized that this paralleled my own life. It manifested a little bit different. And so I'm not going to bore you guys with a bunch of story, but I spent 2 or 3 years at AA sober and I was the happiest guy around. My wife was happy. My daughters were happy. We kept having little baby girls and they were just everywhere. And everybody was happy until I started kind of getting goofy in AA. And I bet you, I don't know for a fact, but I bet you some of y'all can relate to this season of things not being so sweet. I'm sober, yes, but I'm doing crazy things. And I've sponsored hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of men over the years who have drifted into this weird nightmare of an existence. They'll either get twisted up in a different addictions, sex, food, spending, I mean, just whatever it happens to be, or it years later, somebody would say that, Myers, didn't you recognize restless, irritable, and discontent? And I went, how do you recognize restless, irritable, and discontent if you've never read it? You don't even know it exists. I thought the goal was to stay sober one day at a time. That's all I read on the wall. So that's all I knew. And the problem with that is obvious. You're missing the huge piece of what Bill and Bob in the first 100 intended for us to get out of this program. It was an amazing way of life, but I didn't even know it existed. That set-aside prayer is special. Carrie, when you read that, I was thinking the first part of that stuff where it talks about the things I think I know always makes me smile, because I was so amazingly uneducated about what recovery actually looked like. And I think a lot of us go through that. We get into some place. I'm 5 years sober. I'm buying everything that I can get my hands on. I mean, I'm literally spending money I don't have. I bought an airplane, and then I bought another airplane, and then that wasn't enough. I had to go buy another one. Now, who needs three airplanes and hangars to put them in and mechanics to work on them and insurance to, I mean, who needs all that? Well, I'm buying tools. I don't even know what they are. I bet you I bought 100 CDs. Y'all remember CDs, music? Yeah, those things. I bought 100 CDs and never opened them up. I mean, I had thousands of CDs and I'm just buying them and not listening. I'm buying clothes I don't wear. I'm buying, y'all get it. And my wife is looking at me going like, she's just, what's going on with you? And I'm looking at her going, not saying, but just looking at her and going, I'm sober. Yeah, you better give me some street cred, because I'm sober. But my kids are nervous around me. They don't know who's coming home. Y'all ever manifest that or know somebody that's like that, who could be a spiritual giant sitting in the AA meeting, and then when they leave, they can turn into a turd? That's sort of my that's me. I get that. And my family doesn't know who's coming home. I can be the nicest dad in the world, or I can be a POS, and it drives me crazy. And so the depression comes back, and I'm scared. I can't hardly work because I'm so depressed. And my wife is my business partner. Mercifully, she's twice as smart as I am, and she could hold all that stuff together. But it's a scary place to be. My only point of this is it's a horrific place to find yourself sober and then realizing that maybe somewhere in here I missed something. I bet you there are folks in here this morning who connect with this idea like I did. My thought process always was that if I can get rid of the booze and get rid of methamphetamines, I'm going to be okay. Canadian whiskey was my primary problem, and all I got to do is get rid of it and things are going to be groovy. I'll be fine. And I was for a little bit, and then restless, irritable, and discontent comes back, and I get goofy, and I'm doing whatever I can to scratch that itch and to make that stuff go away. And it does go away for a little bit. And so you just get sucked into that sort of nightmare of a life. When I finally met some crusty old guys in AA that saved my bacon, and Cliff Bishop, I always throw him under the bus. And Clifford was an iconic guy in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And he had started a book study called Primary Purpose Group. He started that group the year I sobered up in 88. It would take me 7 years to get there. But when I finally got over there, we had three meetings a week and they were all book studies, and they didn't give a rat's fuzzy rear about anything I had to say or share about my day, about my feelings, Clifford just put his hand up, go, Myers, stop. And then later it would be, Myers, shut the up. Just quit. We don't want to hear all that stuff. What we want to hear is what's written in this book. And I didn't understand it. And then later I did, because what he was trying to get me to understand is that unless I could move towards the common solution that was in the basic text, I was going to be in some real trouble. Don't ever stop and think about how much confusion there is in our rooms. Sometimes the baseline is we got the nicest people in the universe, guys and gals in the room that are just special times 10. But unless the baseline is set by the text, you're going to have a bunch of people, oh, sweetheart, you don't need to work the steps. You just need to come to a bunch of meetings and you'll be okay. Well, I picked up on that. That's what I did. I would much rather come to a meeting than read the text. What I didn't realize was that once those guys got me around and got me lined up with the common solution that Bill Wilson talks about, everything began to change. Everything began to change when I began to realize, wait a minute, that's not going to solve the problem, but this over here will. And it did. Guys, I'm almost a decade sober. And I've never sponsored anybody. And one of the most reoccurring themes in the big book is work and self-sacrifice for others. And here I am. Maybe I am that stupid. I don't know. Maybe I am that stupid. Maybe I just missed the whole thing like that. But the reality of it is that when I finally connected the dots, things got a whole lot better. That little piece that Carrie was reading a minute ago, that little piece on emotional sobriety, one of the things that got me, Carrie, was a couple of paragraphs down from there. It's just two or three lines long, four lines. I want to read this thing, and it really, I felt like I'd been bitch slapped by the truth. It caught me completely off guard because I wasn't expecting what it said. Now, this is a co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, I mean, it's like, this is not what I expected to come from this cat's mouth. Even then, as we hew away, peace and joy may still elude us. That's the place so many of us AA Olsters have come to. And it's a hell of a spot, literally. How shall our unconscious, from which so many of our fears, compulsions, and phony aspirations still stream, be brought into line with what we actually believe, know, and want? How to convince our dumb, raging, and hidden Mr. Hyde becomes our main task. Guys, this is classic Bill Wilson, black and white, in your face kind of directive like that he's kind of famous for on this kind of stuff. This thought that I'm dealing with some unconscious stuff in my head that I'm trying to get lined up with what the other stuff is just sort of a phenomenal deal. How many of y'all have ever sat for a minute and thought about what Bill Wilson was going through? Now, that article was written in, the original letter that he sent that guy was sent in 1953, which is right after Bill had come through tradition hell. He spent all those years trying to codify the traditions, and he finally got all that adopted like this at the cost of personal cost. A lot of his friends walked away. There were a lot of things going on. He was dealing with a lot of depression. It was a nightmare for him. There's a piece of this that I'm so grateful. By the way, as an aside, I've always been grateful for the steps and for the way that was written. But I'm grateful times 10 for the traditions and the things, because without the traditions, Bill Wilson knew that we would have crucified ourselves. We would have just been done. And it was such a cool thing. The older I get, the more I appreciate what he wrote and the sacrifices that he made personally. To get that codified is pretty amazing. I still sponsor lots and lots of men over the years that have never read the traditions, never the it's just the culture of where they sobered up. And so y'all get that. Once I got hold of Clifford, Clifford's sponsor, my sponsor's sponsor was Joe McQuaney. And so you can kind of tell where this is going. I mean, it was a book fest. I mean, it was like Joe would come down from Arkansas and meet with Clifford in Dallas, and Clifford would call me and say, "Hey, come over and eat breakfast," and we'd go sit over there. I don't know how many of y'all have ever met or had ever seen Joe McQuaney, but he was an enormous man, and he was real intimidating, real tall, and he would just kind of lean over you a little bit when he talked, and it was, you listened for sure, because I didn't want to get squashed, but he was something special. But one of the things that he said that was always fascinating to me was, in one of these breakfast conversations, he said, "Myers," he said, "you tend to make AA real complicated." And I said, "Well, sort of. It is complicated, isn't it?" And he goes, "No, it's not complicated." And that's part of the problem is that you want to, well, I said, "Well, so what do I do?" And he said, I need you to rethink this thing and look at the bigger picture of what's going on. As you study the text, what are the biggest recurring themes in the book? What is it that Bill keeps pushing?" And I went, I remember looking at him going, "I wish I had the answer, but I didn't." I just said, "I don't know." And he said, "Work and self-sacrifice for others is one of them." And I went, "No kidding." And he said, "Yeah, Myers," he said, "someday you're going to connect this up and it's going to be important to you to see. Your serenity, your sobriety, and maybe more importantly, your emotional growth is going to be tied to your ability to work with God's kids. And then you're going to have to ask yourself, how much time am I spending with God? This is about time with God and time with God's kids." And I went, "Joe, it's not that simple." And he goes, "Myers, it is that simple. It is. Unless your relationship with your Creator is deepening and getting better, that's a clear sign that something's going on. And it may not be good." I remember Mark Houston going, he used to always talk about this thing about this spiritual place where you are better not be where you are in a year. And by that I mean this growth, this spiritual growth should be it should be growing. It's not just this stagnant thing. And I remember Mark saying one time, he said, "Myers," he said, if where you are today is where you are a year from now, then you're doing something wrong. You need to be moving towards God because there seems to be a flow." And I used to think that the flow was into God's arms, and I thought that was pretty special. But really, the flow is going the other direction. Unless you do some things, you'll move farther and farther away. I mean, how many of y'all have been in a sweet spot with God where you thought, this is awesomeness? And then 2 or 3 weeks later, you're sitting there scratching going, God, who? What was, I mean, we're so far away from where we were, where we want to be. And so it's just something to kind of pay attention to. This is when they forced me to get involved in 12-step work. And I mean, it wasn't an option. It was basically a deep breath. And then, "Myers, you're not going to make it if you don't do this." And so, y'all, let me ask you, how many y'all ever noticed that if you get enough time to crawl up in your head, you can convince yourself of anything? You can convince yourself that you're the smartest person in the world, or you're the luckiest person in the world, or you're the biggest victim in the world. Or, I mean, you just crawl up in your head. Hey, my head's not a really good place to just sit and visit. I need to get out of my head. And when I couldn't, I always wanted to connect everything intellectually. And then when they say, "Wait a minute, if you'll go help that guy, you'll get better emotionally." And I'm going, I can't make it connect. And I remember Clifford looking at me and going, Myers, we don't give a crap. We don't care that you, whether you connect it or not. Just do it. And I did. And it was the most magic time in my entire existence on this planet was when I finally started working with men. It was one of those things where it wasn't just one guy, it was five guys in one night that asked me to work with them. And it was, holy cow, what do I do now? And everything, began to change. And that's what this whole thing is about. The reason that I always talk about it, regardless of the talk, I talk about 12-step stuff and our ability to affect other people's lives, because I've sponsored so many men that don't do anything with anybody else. Well, my 12-step work is I'm going to meetings. Dude, that's not what it says. That's going to meetings is not work and self-sacrifice. It may feel that way sometimes, but that's not what Bill Wilson was talking about. Can you find folks that are hurting in a meeting and then try to be of service? If you can, you're going to be a winner. Not only will you stay sober, but you might actually smile some. You might actually start laughing. You might actually be able to keep that relationship going that you want so badly that you're losing because you're a walking dumpster fire. And that's the reason why this stuff is so amazingly important. I think the $64,000 question every day for us is that stuff that they were talking about. How much time are you spending with God? And how much time are you spending with God's kids? And be truthful. And if it's not much, change it. All you need is the clarity of where you actually are. Somebody asked me one time, they said, how do we know, how do you know where you are in the big picture? And I remember in that workshop, there were some people that were kind of shaking their head and they kind of rolled their eyes like, why would he ask that question? But I thought it was a fascinating question, because I think what I'm looking for always in recovery is clarity. I want to be clear where I am and what it is that I need to be doing. And one of the best ways I know, and I talk about this all the time because I think it's so important, is go to page 60 in your big book. You look at page 60 to 63. You've got 2.5 pages where Bill Wilson stops talking about alcoholism completely. He doesn't talk about booze. He doesn't talk about any of this other kind of stuff. He introduces us to this weird ass idea that selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problem. And it's this is when I used to just recoil. I just used to go, well, no, stop. It's not that. Canadian whiskey is my problem. And then he goes back in, and when you read that, down at the bottom of 60 and 61, especially, they're talking about this stage character, and they describe these different situations. Y'all, I'd leave a meeting when I started connecting this up. I'd leave this meeting and I would be patting myself on the back, literally pat myself on the back because I've that spiritual share in that meeting that I just left. And then the next morning, I'd get up early. I'd go to the airport. I'd be flying airplanes with my homies. We'd be riding motorcycles. We'd be cussing and telling stories and gossiping and doing. I mean, I'm a completely different guy when I was in the room with those folks. And we see this all the time. We see this. How many people can I, let me do this, because there's a lot of gals in here. How many of y'all have ever gone out with a guy and y'all met at 6 o'clock in the evening and he's the nicest guy in the world? I mean, I'm talking sweetheart of a guy. And then halfway through the night, he realizes that things may not work out the way he wants them to work out. And he turns into a total jerk. Y'all ever go out with that guy? Man, I'm telling you. I mean, what's disturbing is I was that guy. I was that guy too. And I'm thinking, this is so. Clifford asked me one time, he said, Myers, he said, what we're looking for here more than anything is authenticity. How authentic are you? Or are you simply a stage character? And I'm telling you, if you've spent any time in our rooms, you've known men that could be spiritual giants sitting in an AA meeting, and we all know that he's cheating on his wife, and he's just or stealing from his boss, or we see this, and that's the disturbing part. There's a sweet spot in AA when you begin to realize that you need to really start caring about your character, about who you really are authentically. Not the stage character face that you're trying to put up, but who are you really? But guys, I got to tell you, there's an amazing amount of peace and comfort in knowing that you're authentic, that you're not the stage character anymore, because the baseline has kind of been set, and it's sweet. Go back and read that stuff, and then 2 or 3 hours later, read that 2.5 pages again, and then see if you can identify. And listen, I want to be crystal clear on this. It doesn't matter what you see. What you see gives you the clarity to know what you need to do. If you're not the stage character, rock on. If you're the stage character, rock on. At least you know authentically who you are. And from there, we can move. We can do what we need to do. But we need to identify first where you are. Just as an add-on to that little tirade, the prayer on 63, that little third step prayer, is there anybody in here that wasn't a bit caught off guard by that third step prayer? At the center of that prayer, it says, "Relieve me of the bondage of self." Now, listen, why didn't Bill Wilson write, "Relieve me of the bondage of alcohol"? I mean, isn't this about staying sober? I mean, isn't that what it? Bill was two steps ahead of us. He was trying to get us to understand that unless we dealt with this self thing and other things that were going to creep up in the middle of our sobriety, unless this stuff was dealt with, the bigger picture was dealing with all of that. Because I got to tell you guys, if you're sober and you're struggling and unhappy and you're fighting a bunch of stuff and life is a burden, then we need to look hard at that. I mean, I'm going to put my name and telephone number stuff up in the chat, and if I can help in any way, man, we'll jump on it and do it. I just it's not the alcohol that scares me. It's the emotional and mental stuff that goes on after that stuff's out of the picture. Because let me tell you something, most of us will realize at some point in time that the booze or the dope or whatever it was, the food or the gambling or whatever the addiction is like this, was treating that internal condition in a way that nothing else would. And now we've asked you to leave that out of the picture, quit, don't do that. And now you're left with nothing to treat the internal condition. You better find something, buddy. I love you enough to tell you the truth right now. Find something. And the solution is right there in front of us in the basic text. And we just need to get you to read it and then understand. We can help you do that thing. There's another piece in here that I find fascinating that connects with this. If you're curious where you stand in the big picture of your recovery, whether you're the stage character or whether you're authentic, go back and read a bunch of the promises. I was on a meeting last night and they were reading the ninth step promises at the end of the meeting. I want to read this thing. If you got your book, flip over to page 75. Wait a minute, they moved it. It's not in my book. Well, there it is. I'm not going to read all of it. I'm going to skip down just a little bit, but there's a, we can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Wow. Can we? Wow. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. Now, we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Guys, that's some heady stuff. Walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. Now, so stick with me. So either Bill Wilson was full of crap And all of those promises were rhetorical. He was just writing them because he had to fill a paragraph. That's one possibility. Or he was telling the truth and he was setting this pretty amazing baseline of where we're supposed to live our life. When I finally made that connection and I realized, wait a minute, maybe Bill and First 100, maybe they were telling me that I could actually move towards that kind of a life. And then when I began to see those promises begin to manifest, I went, holy cow, if those manifested, maybe those can too. And I got to just tell you, it's a game changer. It's an eye opener. I've sponsored a lot of men. I ask them to read that stuff and they kind of shrug their shoulders and go, I get it. But they've not experienced it. And this is the stuff that I think is so important that Bill Wilson was talking about in his letter to his friend that they reproduced, that emotional sobriety stuff. I think that as we began to get closer and began to take this stuff seriously, we began to realize that the depth of Alcoholics Anonymous is far deeper than anything we ever thought it could be. That we are so far past this just getting sober stuff. And I know some of you guys introduced yourself tonight. And some of you guys had real short sobriety. And God love you. We're blessed that you're here. What I'm hoping to do, what I wish I could guarantee I could do is move you, kind of pull you with a vision of how amazing recovery could actually be. And that it was so much more than just staying sober one day at a time, which ironically our book never says. Our later, if there was some literature that GSO printed that talks about that. But the book talks about living life one day at a time, but we stay sober for good and for all. And when we kind of connect up the dots of that, we began to kind of sense that there's something deeper here. Let me wrap this stuff up real quick. One of the cool things, and I think that there is a sweet spot that runs through every one of us, that we kind of get to it at different times in our sobriety. But this sweet spot is a place where we kind of sit someday at a meeting, or we sitting in our car after a meeting and we kind of take a deep breath like this and we sit there for a second and we realize that we're experiencing, maybe for the first time in a long time, peace. This internal idea of just simply being okay in my own skin, regardless of the external stuff. I've spent decades trying to control everything external. If she'd do what I want her to do, if I could get that car, if I could get a fourth airplane and a bigger hangar, if I could get a, y'all understand? I mean, I'm trying to control everything externally so that I can be quote unquote happy. And the reality of that is that I'm moving at light speed away from the coolest existence that I could ever have. And that's why this stuff is just so amazing. To be able to take a deep breath and be peaceful in your own skin, regardless of what's going on, what our kids are doing or what our work's doing or whatever, just be okay and realize that we're standing inches from our Creator and everything is okay. This was a life that I think Bill Wilson began to realize was possible. And you could tell in the things that he wrote and the way he wrote it, it was sort of phenomenal. Another piece of this sweet spot thing I want to talk about real quick is, there is this magic moment in most of our lives. And I think a lot of y'all have already experienced it when we connect the dot and realize that we, based on our experience and based on what we've been through and done, are able to affect change in the lives of other people in a way that nobody else could. How many of y'all have ever seen a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a family member, it doesn't matter. We see people who are trying desperately to help us get clear of this stuff, and we just simply, they don't get it. We say something and their look is over our shoulder. They just don't connect. And then we talk to a little busted up drunk in a meeting and they say something and I look at them and go, "What, dude, you just said what you understand." And I always think back of Bill and Dr. Bob and them sitting there in that deal and Dr. Bob telling Ann, "Listen, 15 minutes, and this guy's leaving, and I'm done with him." And then what is it? 6+ hours? He's still sitting there talking like this because they relate to each other. Listen, I'm so grateful that I'm sober. I love the fact that I'm sober today, and I'm not moving around trying to figure out how to get some more booze or slink into a dope house or do something. I'm so grateful that I'm not there. But I got to tell you, I'm far more grateful that there are lives that I can change and affect because of experience that I've had. And because I understand a clear message of recovery, we don't always have to just go on the story thing. I remember a conversation with a lady one time, and she said, "Well, our story is the most important thing we have." And I said, "How about you go back and read page 17? And Bill Wilson tells us that the story is important. But he said that would never have held us together as we are now held. And then he introduces us to this amazing thing called a common solution. The moment Cliff Bishop and those guys began to help me see what was in the basic text, and I want to be real clear. This is the reason why I'm always a total nut job about book studies. I mean, I'm just, if you have a choice of going over here and visit with your homies in a discussion meeting or going over here and sitting in a book study, 100% of the time, I'm going to say, go to the book study, because the book study is going to teach you the things that you need to know so that you can teach this to other people. And so that when you go to a wind up joint or a place to go to carry the message, you will be amazingly changed, and because you're not just trying to tell a story and shoot from the hip and say something cute and clever. You're carrying a life-saving message that changes everything if they just simply follow the directions, which is just pure magic. I'm going to tell you one more quick story and then I'm done. I want to be real transparent about this because sometimes I think people misunderstand what I'm saying like that. I'm not a spiritual giant in any form. I'm just a busted up old guy from Texas. But when Clifford and those guys forced me to get involved in carrying the message, that's exactly what it was that I did. And I was kind of obsessed with it. I was doing, at one point, I spent 5 years doing 3 talks a week at Homeward Bound in Dallas, which was South Oak Cliff, which is kind of a weird area of town. And it's a 2-story building that always smelled like urine when you walked in the front door. It was the craziest deal. It was this kind of this. and I'd wake up on, especially on Wednesday and Friday, I'd go. And then I'd wake up on Wednesday morning at my house and I'd go, "It's Wednesday." And then I'd go, "Oh crap. I got to drive all the way over to Homeward Bound tonight. It's a 55-minute drive with no traffic." And that doesn't exist in Dallas. Okay. So it's usually 1 hour and 20 minutes to get to Homeward Bound and walk in, try to hold my breath, and then walk upstairs to the second floor and do my deal and teach. And after that thing, I would walk out. And there's a little landing out there. They'd let us walk out on a fire escape to get down to the parking lot instead of going back down through the building. And so I'd stand up on that fire escape and I'd look out over the landscape, and you're high enough on that thing to see the downtown Dallas, and the sun going down. And it's absolute pure. I think heaven looks just like this when you walk out on that landing. And I would walk down the stairs and all my homies would be downstairs. They're already out of their meeting earlier, and they'd be leaning against the car. They'd be smoking a butt. They'd be laughing real hard. I'd get down there and we'd start laughing and telling stories and this kind of stuff. And then I'd get in my car and I'd get in my truck and listen to Marvin Gaye all the way home. And it was just like pure heaven. And I'd walk in. And I remember my wife telling me one time, she said, "Myers, I don't know what it is that you're doing over there at that place, but whatever it is, you got to keep doing it. Because I don't think you realize how different you are when you come home." And the reality of that is I didn't see it at the time. It's not anything I connected up intellectually like this. It's just simply something that it became a part of my life. I'd call Clifford with a problem. He'd say, "Go to the 24-hour club." I'd drive over to the 24-hour club, walk in, place smelled like a big burnt chicken fried steak. They had an old kitchen in there like this where they'd feed these transient guys coming in right off the street. And I'd light a few cigarettes. I'd talk and we'd have a little meeting there in the little cafeteria. And I'd go home and I can't ever remember calling Clifford about the problem. I can't ever remember my problem being anything else other than, it was no big deal. I don't know why I made such a big deal out of it anyway like that. As if your life is chaos, if your life is a struggle, if you don't see what peace looks like, if you don't feel content in your own skin, double down on your commitment to learn some basic text and then go share that information with folks who are desperate to know the truth. I'm so frustrated with people that just sit in meetings and wait for the drunks to come to us. Go get those little bastards. Go get them. 24-hour club, all of these wind-up joints that we go to, just go snag them, and you'll be amazed at how excited they'll be and how encouraged they will be that there is indeed a solution, and they don't have to wait 10 years to have the solution. They can have it immediately, because we're going to get busy immediately. So, listen, I love you guys, and so honored to be here. And I can't, I've got a couple of Zoom thingies this weekend like this, and I'm going to miss some of these talks, but I'm going to catch some of these. Will, I think, is talking at 3:00, and y'all be crazy to miss him. Anyhow, I love y'all. Thank you so much for letting me come.